Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, lovely listeners. I am Mary Watson. I am the author of 8 books, including the most recently published international bestseller, The Cleaner, and the forthcoming The Lover. And I am your host on PageCast today. So welcome. And I'm talking to writer, researcher, gender-based violence consultant, Joy Watson. Joy Watson has many years' experience as a feminist researcher, initially working in the South African Parliament, and now consults with international agencies, including the UN, on gender-based violence. She is also the author of The Other Me, and now her newest book, her third book, Because I Love You, is out this year. Joy is also my sister, and we're part of a bigger pack of sisters who live spread out across the world, and we remain tightly connected despite the distance. And now, when my own children were really little, they would call each other my chother, because they were each other. And because that was, two of them were pretty close in age. And they were each other's chother because their worlds were so closely bound up with each other. And Joy, you're my chother.
Oh, I'm going to get easy, and we're just beginning.
Yeah, you were my chother when we were growing up, particularly, and you also were my teacher. You taught me to read before I could go to school. You also taught me how to cause trouble.
Yes, you did.
And you were also the big sister who looked out for me and the co-conspirator in a highly imaginative childhood, and occasionally my tormentor.
Yes, that's true.
Would you call this a fair assessment?
It's a very fair assessment, but I would like to remind you again that at the school that I went to, the primary school, we got soup every day for lunch. And you will recall, Mary, Fridays were a special day where God descended from the skies and gave strawberry jam and bread with the soup. And I waited for Fridays. And you will remember that one particular Friday I decided, because you're my chother, I love that word, I would bring you the treat of the soup and the strawberry jam. And I packed it in my case and I brought it to you. That's how important you are.
Except it didn't make it to me.
Yes, so what I didn't know is that you cannot take a bowl of soup and put it in your case and bring it home. And I was shocked when I opened the bag and said, Mary, come and look what I brought you. And then there was just vegetables all over my books. But it's the thought.
Yeah, so we're really lucky. We're part of this big pack of girls, and because there's some age gaps between, like, we're the two who kind of grew up together. Mm. I don't know, I always, when I go around people, you know, when I meet people, they'll say, so do you have brothers or sisters? And I'll always say, well, I've got my pack of sisters, my coven of sisters. And I always feel really lucky, and I feel sorry for other people who don't have a pack of sisters the way we do. Do you also feel like that?
I do, and it's the, on the one hand, the sense of belonging to something bigger than yourself. So the space, you know, home not being a physical thing, but a place. And I really feel that, especially when we are all together. But it's also the madness and the magic, like the ritualistic dances that we do to conjure up
whatever we need.
It's not say too much about that.
No, it's private. It's all secret rituals. We can't be explaining too much about that right now.
Yeah.
So I want to move on specifically talking about the book. Can you give us a summary, like, what is your new book, which is an incredibly powerful exploration, which I loved. Like, while I was reading it, I was kind of half forgetting that this is my sister who wrote it, because it is just so amazing. It's such a powerful book. And I'm going to ask you lots of questions about it. But for now, I first want to know, what is it about? How would you describe it?
So when I thought about doing this book, I was interested in love, firstly, of, you know, what love does to us, what we become when, and I'm talking about the love in an intimate relationship with a significant other. And I was interested in the hurt that can hide inside of love. Love can both make us feel a sense of belonging, feel a sense of beauty and magic in the world, but how when, and I was interested specifically in the tiny little harms that over time scratch at the psyche. And specifically that when it's happening, we're not quite sure that it's, we're not quite aware because everything is so beautiful, the other person is so amazing that it doesn't quite seem real. It's just this little scratching. And I was interested about, you know, what happens when the scratching increases in frequency and intensity, and the notion that while that's happening, because there's also something good and beautiful about it, that we don't have words for what's happening. We are unable to name the slow erosion of something beautiful. We are unable to see the ways in which it harms us. And so that's where the idea started. And then, you know, I was primarily interested in times in my life where I'd experienced this, but in talking to other women about it, it became very clear that just so many women have experienced this and have stories, and in different ways, they have different stories. And it sort of, you know, it turned into an exercise where I knew I wanted to do something. I wasn't entirely sure what, whether it would be a research project. And so I started having a series of conversations with women about this. And in the end, there were three who gave me the time that it required to really dig in deep. And so, yeah, that's how the story, the project started.
That was, for me, the most striking thing about it, kind of recognizing that it's about the quiet violence. It's about the quiet, small ways in which love can harm you. And that, for me, is such an interesting topic because it's not something I've seen done that much. I mean, sort of the bigger violences are spoken about quite a lot. The more explicit, overt violences are well covered, especially in nonfiction. But the kind of quiet, more subtle harms isn't something that I've seen explored quite so much. And it's quite funny because my book this year is also about quiet violence. So it's really bizarre that we kind of, my chatter and I had this kind of weird in sync moment where we both kind of settled on exploring this kind of really subtle ways in which love can harm you. I wanted to ask you about this, about why you wanted to focus on this specifically, but I think you kind of answered that, unless there's anything you want to add to that.
One thing that I did want to say was, you know, I was interested in Robert Nixon has this concept of what he calls, what he terms slow violence, and he uses it in relation to environmental injustice. So he talks about how when we are not caring for the environment and we see the degradation of the environment, that this sort of, it manifests also in social injustice, and that the people who are poor and most socially vulnerable feel it the most, having less resources to kind of push back against the impact, and that this really is a form of violence on their lives in terms of the lived reality impact. And so this was the thing I knew that, you know, I was thinking about when love hurts as a form of slow violence, but I shied away from using those words. Okay. And precisely because when you say that, I think in a country like South Africa where there is so much violence, we're saturated by it, but it would also be alienating. And, you know, I'm hoping that the book will get people thinking about how love can hurt. But if you say it is about slow violence, the tendency is to want to go, no, that's not my relationship. Oh, no.
Exactly.
And I mean, even for myself, you know, in experiences that I've had. And so I sort of switched to thinking about harm and hurt, being harmed and being hurt. And the point is it's not small harms. It's the kind of when someone hurts you, and not physically, but they hurt you emotionally and psychologically, that over a period of time, the impact is as bad as if it's physical, exactly, because it actually impacts your mental health and well-being, and your health and well-being. And, you know, that most of us don't want to be put under an umbrella that kind of harm might be a form of violence. So I step back and I try to only introduce that at the end of the book to say, and in a non-judgmental way, to say if you're going through a relationship that, and you know, I sort of think about it as in transactional terms, a bit like a bank. If you are putting into this bank and you're giving and you're giving and you make withdrawals and you get, and at some point, if you, over time, you start feeling, but hey, you know, what I'm putting in to this relationship is far more than what I'm getting out. And look, that's okay if that's, if you put in far more than what you get out. But if you're putting in far more than what you get out and you're also being harmed in one way or another, if your emotional needs are not being met, it's, the book is meant to be a non-judgmental reflection on, let's think through this for a moment. And without, without trying to impose or write any answers onto the self, but how might you sit in that and just be in it and think about it through a different kind of lens for a moment, whatever your outcome will be.
Yeah, I like that. What another thing that I really like about it is that you tell these stories in a way where you give the beginning, middle, and the end of them. And I really like that you get that sense of falling in love, that sense of being caught up in the romance and the beauty and the spontaneity of it, and how that kind of progresses then from that beauty, that excitement, exhilaration of the beginning to the end. And the way that I've kind of, it kind of strikes me that the book itself is a weaving. It's a tapestry. And and you've kind of put these voices together. And the way that meaning emerges from the book is not through a strictly linear progression of story, but through an elusive kind of meaning that emerges from having these stories told next to each other, from looking at the tapestry as a whole. Yes. And I really love that about the book. And I mean, you can tell that I really like the book because I've got all these nice things to say about it, because I keep saying I really love this. But I really do love that. And you know, it's a particularly interesting way of telling a story for me, that when you, when you're moving away from non-linear progression and into putting things next to each other and seeing the meaning that emerges as you put things next to each other. Was this intentional, or did it emerge itself in the magic of writing?
So, you know, when I started with this idea and I had these three stories, I actually had no idea how to make it work, because I knew that there were these three stories, and they had to be significantly...
Four stories, because there's...
Because there's a bit of me in it too, that's true. But they had to be greatly condensed. So the pace had to be quite quick. And then there are these reflections where I'm reflecting, you know, after each story. So I rewrote, at the beginning, I wrote, I think, three initial drafts when I started playing with it, and it wasn't working. It was a very complex thing to do, and also to give voice to the women that I was working with and to hold my own voice. And in the reflection pieces, I was worried. In fact, I said to Jill, my publisher, at some point, do I sound preachy? I'm so worried that I'm such a preachy person. So, you know, it was, there was a very conscious intentionality about how to get this right. And I really wanted it to be something where if somebody who's going through difficulty in their relationship opens up this book, that it's not, it's just a safe place to just come and pause and think. And I think, you know, it took a while to get into the rhythm of that the three stories, and they are in, they're followed, each story is followed by a little reflection. And, you know, initially I wanted to put as little as myself into the book as possible. And I think that there is relatively, you know, it is diminished. There's less of me than the other women. But it became disingenuous because I think in some ways I started thinking a lot about feminist research methodology. While this wasn't a feminist research project, these are the kind of values that I hold very dear to my heart. So there was a lot to think about in terms of the ethics of how to do this properly, the, you know, the ethics of voice, the ethics of what to say and what not to say, how to make it participatory with the other women who were involved. So there was a lot to think about. And I think that, you know, eventually, after lots of going in a wrong direction, it came into landing in the right place.
I think that you are quite uniquely placed to write this book, you know, considering your long history and profession, your professional qualifications and experience. So I think what you bring to this book is something, you know, that is rooted in a wealth of experience through your own, years and years, decades of research and approaches to research. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about how the work you've done, basically all your adult life has fed into Because I Love You.
It's interesting that you ask that, because I don't think I could have written this book maybe even sort of 3-4 years ago. I feel like it's a becoming that it took life experiences, it took my world of work and working with, so I work, you know, in feminist research, we place a lot of emphasis, not to say that quantitative evidence doesn't count. Quantitative research is very important, and it has its place in the world, the scientific research. But we do care about qualitative work, which is the space where stories unfold, where you bring the power of people's lives into, for example, policy decisions, in making, in this instance, policymakers understand why do you need to change something? Why do you need to think about transforming things? And the power of that is telling the story of a lived reality and how what people are grappling with. And so I think, you know, and sort of in that discipline, one of the most beautiful things about it is that it's reflexive. You are never an objective outsider looking in on people's lives. You have to put yourself under the microscope and say, who am I? How am I impacting the conversations I'm having, the data I'm extracting? And so I feel that in holding those conversations, for example, that I do think that I sought, you know, I may not have gotten it entirely right, but I was very conscious of doing it with care and attention and kindness. And it's not extractionist. It's also about what do they get out of it. And I think that the beauty of it was that, and certainly from their feedback, is that we were meaning-making together. Mm. And so we were trying to make sense of this happened. And in doing that, I shared my story. And we were trying together to find the language to name what happened. And so there's, I don't want to get too emotional about it, but it became a project that became so emotive that I needed a space to also unpack it. Because you can't sit and listen to stories about love hurting you, of really believing in the beauty of something magical, and it goes wrong. And it goes wrong slowly and accumulatively, and it leaves this indelible damaging on your psyche. You can't listen to that without reflecting the times in your life when it's happened to you. And you can't have those conversations happen and write what I wrote without it changing you fundamentally. So the process of the book was so deeply emotional. This sounds all weird, but the word that I have for it is becoming. I felt I was becoming, and I still am. Like, there's a becoming that was happening in having the gift of sitting with these women and hearing the stories and being able to reflect on my own. So it's this huge thing that is not, the book is a tangible output in the world. It's about so much more than that. It gave me something so huge. I'm becoming.
Mm. That's beautiful. I did appreciate that you were also one of the women, that you weren't kind of just writing about them over there. You were writing about people that you've had, obviously had a connection with, but then at the same time that you're part of this story as well. And I think it makes it so much more intimate that the book includes your own reflections about your own life. But in doing that, I think it's an incredibly brave thing to do, to write and to publish, both for you and for the women who you've spoken to. And I wonder, you know, like, how do you publish how do you put out into this world, which can be very, very horrible at times? Mm. How do you put out something that is so raw and so vulnerable? You know, do you have armors? Are you sufficiently armored? Yeah. What are your armors? How do you get them?
I remember somebody reading the manuscript and saying, you've been through so much, and I'm not going to talk about it yet, but basically, you know, the book starts with how my husband left me for a younger woman, and with no words, with just upping and leaving. And I remember somebody reading the manuscript and saying to me, you've been through so much, poor you, and not liking that response at all, because I don't see myself as being a victim. I don't want pity. I don't want pity written onto me. I went through something terrible, as many people do. Pity's not what I write into my story. It was deeply hurtful. I've struggled to find my way for a long time. But at the same time, I'm conscious that what makes a book is not what do you put into it, it's how readers interpret it. So people are going to write all sorts of things, and they're going to read me in all sorts of ways. And some of that I might not be happy with. But I think that what matters is in having the conversations, and I hope that the book will spark a series of conversations about harm and hurt in love. And through the things that we don't necessarily talk about, like, you know, I mean, one of the stories is about a woman who is in love with somebody who is in another relationship, and she's also in another relationship, and this carries on for more than a decade, and eventually gets to a place where she leaves her partner, and he's still with his, and he promises the world and that he will leave, and she keeps buying into this, and then there's this slow erosion of self in that, holding out for a promise that never lands. And how, I think that this is a thing with all the stories, is the notion of feeling seen. I think that in what happened to me, in not having the opportunity to talk about why you left me, what did I do?
Closure.
The closure, the words, just the gift of what words carry so much power. The fact that there were no words meant that I was left on my own to find my own words and to make sense of it. And in some ways, working with these women helped me make sense. So it was finding the words for myself. And I think that when I thought about that as a form of harm, and I came to a place where it is a tremendous form of cruelty, because we all need to be seen, and there's nothing like, we want to be seen, we want to be heard. And so when somebody denies you an opportunity after more than 10 years of love and adoration, and they deny you an opportunity of the gift of saying, but this is why it went wrong, it is a particular form of cruelty, and you feel unseen and unheard. And then that was the thread that started unraveling in all the stories about when the love is so great, but increasingly you're not heard and you're not seen. And even though the other person might pretend to hear you and do all the ritualistic things around, I see you, I hear you, but at the fundamental level of who you are, you're not seen or not heard. And actually, they're a little bit unkind or a little bit uncruel, or a lot of bit unkind and a lot of bit uncruel. And yeah, that's the... And we don't talk about this stuff enough. And I think, you know, there's so much social stigma around... it's far easier in some bizarre way. Partially thank you to the kind of to feminist movements, we are able to talk about physical violence. We have language, we have movements, we have activism for that, but we do not have the conversations for the more insidious, quieter forms of harm that is just cruel. We don't have a movement for that, and we don't talk about that enough, and there's so much social stigma going, oh well, I waited kind of 10 odd years for a man who's actually married and made promises, and I was stupid enough to believe it, and then nothing happened.
One of the things that kind of stands out about what you're doing in terms of how you're telling this story, this story that I think is really important that needs to be told, is how you tell it, and that there's moments of reflection, there's moments of observation, there's moments of beauty, And there's also moments of hilarity that actually where I was laughing out loud. So it's quite a roller coaster in terms of emotions of what you're making the reader feel mm-hmm. as you write. And it's not all just, you know, one tone, you know, trauma dumping or anything like that. It's like mm-hmm. that is like the furthest thing in terms of how it's presented. It's way more emotionally fine tuned, and so that you know that is one of the striking things about the book. But what I want to know is, and so my question is specifically, what do you want readers to take from the book? But before I ask the question, I want to say that one of the things that I particularly took from it was your discussion of ritual, which is one of the moments where I found myself laughing out loud while I was reading the book. And not only because you make me look like an absolute fake.
Sorry, because yes, the ritual, you are the author of the ritual, right?
Well, I look like an absolute, like, okay. But it is something that I actually took from the story, and not because of me, or not because it references me, but the idea of using ritual to ground yourself and ritual to make sense of the mess of the world. Mm. And so, what is it that that for me is something that I like just stand, put your lipstick on, make your coffee, you know, do mm-hmm. the things that you need to do in order to feel okay in the world. What is it that you want readers to take from the book?
So before I go there, I just wanted to say something about the book having humor and all these things. And I actually really want to thank Annie Olufide for that, because she was the person who sort of first believed in the idea of this book. And what she said at the time, she was like, you know, I get what you're wanting to do. And initially it was going to be more of an academic exercise. And she said, but what will bring the spark is your voice and how you talk and you're funny and bring all those things. And Annie gave me this huge gift in knowing that my voice can be cool. Mm. I can be a cool kid. Mm. Yeah. I don't often believe that.
You make me laugh. Oh, my God, make me laugh.
And so she kind of gave me this. She said, that's what we want. We want your voice, like you to talk like you being you. And that was deeply liberating, because who the F knew that people want me to speak my voice? I'm consciously on a mission to do less of that in the world. So that was beautiful. And I think that was when I really found myself in the book. And so there are pieces on erotica, because it's also meant to be a joyful book. Like, how do we celebrate the erotic in life? So it's not all just about getting hurt, but how do we think about hurt? How do we think about sex? How do we think about the things that deeply give us pleasure? So there's, you know, there's a lot else there. And I think that what I want readers to take away from the book is this, you know, firstly, for those who have gone through relationships that hurt, or going, especially for those who are in the midst of a relationship that's causing hurt, that it's just a place that you come to that doesn't give you answers, but it's a safe place that might help you think and just be, and that it might, I mean, I know a big thing in the book is that the ending of love and the ending of a relationship never lands from the sky. You don't just go, oh, well, like, this is clearly awful. There's a journey to the end. Like, you travel towards it. And for each person, it's different. And you know when the time comes. Sometimes it doesn't come. Sometimes people stay in harmful relationships. And I'm big on not, this is not a book about judging journeys. Like, it's just really meant to be food for thought, for thinking about your journey in your love. And if you might be on a journey to potentially ending that love, and how do you walk knowing that there are others going through similar things? But then more than that, it's to think about the erotica. What are you doing to have the erotica in your life? What are you doing to bring meaning? I mean, the ritual piece is the piece that ends the book. And, you know, you gave me the ritual to do. And what was beautiful about it is, so when I'm in crisis and I reach out to you, you're far away in Ireland, but you always come with wisdom.
Oh, wow.
And in your own special way. I mean, I wouldn't exactly. Sometimes I do think you should be a psychiatrist, but then I do feel you'd like the people be on the couch and you'd be there going, oh, fuck off. So, but at the same time, you're magical and useful. And you also bring things like the strange magic rituals that you gave me. And I'm not going to give it away, because you really have to buy the book. to get this recipe. But basically, you gave me the thing to do, where I had to go into a forest and do something with my... And in community, I did it with girlfriends.
Mm. And Tandy.
And Tandy the dogs. And that was a disaster, but it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. And that ending note was about how do you find the rituals and the things that make sense for you that help you let go? And how, in doing that, do you connect to community and to others or to your support base and have them hold your hand, even like in my ritual where my support base was sweating at me because I was messing things up. But also, like in that ritual, something difficult that made me cry at night, that ritual had me laughing my ass off in the forest. Yeah. And it transformed it, not transformed, that's not the right word, but it created a moment of beauty out of something deeply devastating. And so the book is about how do you find those moments of beauty? How do you hang on to them? And how do you make them uniquely your own? Whether you have a sister giving you strange magic rituals in the forest or not, how do you do that for yourself?
Joey, I am so sure that this book is going to go on to inspire so many people who read it. And my question, my last question to you is, which book or books, whether recent or from earlier in your life, most influenced or inspired you and what's made them so significant to you?
That's really unfair to ask somebody with brain fog. I don't remember my name half the time. But and also I read so much, it's very, very hard because there's so much beauty in words. I can only remember what I read recently. And, you know, this is for a different conversation, but recently it was Nadia Davids's Cape Fever. And it touched me. So it's not one of those, it's not necessarily answering your question, but it had so much meaning for me because it spoke...
Well, it inspired you.
It inspired me because it spoke to a history from which we come. And it reimagined Cape Town as a city through the lens of the past and directly linked to our ancestors and what life might have been like in that time. And it touched me because, well, it's just exquisitely done. But I think that, you know, linked to the conversation at hand, I think that there's tremendous magic in going into the past and looking at it to make sense of the present and for reimagining the futures that we want to build. So the books, like Nadia's, are the things that help me. I'm a meaning maker. I want to make meaning. And fiction is a big part of that. And if you give me tools about understanding the past and how they impact the present and how I want to be a part of leaving behind in this small way, how do I show up and how do I be me in a way that is kind and true and makes somebody feeling better rather than worse. And then at a bigger level, in terms of the kind of social activism role, how do we dare to dream that the world is not about the horror of Iran being invaded and all the global warfare? How do we build up in linking small individual acts of kindness and integrity? Because we are individuals and then we're part of families and then we're part of communities and we're part of a country and we're part of the African continent and then we connect to this global story. So if we start with ourselves and in our families and our communities and we dare to dream that we can change the trajectory of where we're going and who we want to be, you know, I kind of keep imagining the people who are not here now, who will come. Mm-hmm. And what are we building for them? And now, in the face of all this onslaught and how big the violence and the degradation and the horror and the fascism and the rise of the right-wing agendas, how we dare, in how we just wake up every day and show up, how we dare to change the values of all of that.
That's a really powerful way to end the discussion. So thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I can't wait for the rest of the world to read your extremely beautiful, powerful book, Because I Love You.
I'm feeling You don't make me cry. We can end without tears. That was really special. I appreciate the care you brought to the book. And I know that we will have conversations tonight with chocolate and wine.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's the unfiltered version.
They're like a bear.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.